So today, there is the. We have some time to answer some of the questions that were in the box. I hope everyone saw that there was a box, another box, available to put questions in. And I just want to mention that the idea here is not that I give answers to whatever questions. But most important of all is to have the questions and to have the questions alive. Many, many times, many of the questions don't have any answer. And the purpose of the question itself, or many times the question itself just melts or dissolves, and suddenly we find out that that which was a question is not a question anymore. And it's not that we have an answer, but somehow we look in our pockets and back and around, and the question is not there anymore. So many of the questions that pop up while being in silence and but while tuning in are those kind of questions. And still, I feel it's very, very important to give time for those questions. The last few years, I keep thinking, I'm not going to give any more Dharma talk. I'll just ask, is there any question? If there is no question, why to speak? I mean, why to So, with that spirit of not trying to solve the questions, but just to put the questions out and see what they are saying and in which ways we can keep the question alive, not with an answer, but alive, we can spend this time together looking at those questions. Not to quarrel with life. I'm bad at speaking English, but I'm really bad reading English. So he says, not to quarrel with life. Yes, I agree. It says here, right? Not saying anything. But how to deal with injustice? For example, loved ones who have to suffer a lot. Can we do anything about that? Suffering through illness or schizophrenia, or I don't know. Or people and animals in the world who suffer innocently. Is painful, that is painful and hard to accept. What to do? So yeah, that's a good question. And it feels to me that this is something that must be alive at some point, at least. This deep questioning about the suffering, you know, is one of the key questions in many religions, like about the good and bad and how that is created like that, basically. Why there is suffering. Buddha is saying there is suffering and there is a way out of suffering. But first, somehow, he says there is suffering. So there are many, many ways to approach that. One of them is with some certain tightness of wanting to solve that. There is a typical way of wanting to solve injustice or get rid of injustice by aggression. This is not possible. You know? And how much we have to really find the middle way or the keeping that alive and yet coming into action from another place, from a place that has no aggression, or a place that I would say like is not even that focused on changing that or not changing that. Like a place who can, from where we can be with that pain, that suffering, and embrace it, even if there is nothing we can do, perhaps technically, actively. But if there is, like from this more relaxed place and more in tune place, we can definitely find our own voices of what is the right thing to do. So the two big ways of like going out to get rid of injustice or suffering, and then the other way of like just having the courage to really tune in and to live with that without answer, like live with that painful feeling of feeling the pain of others and oneself and not having any answer and any solution for that, that is painful and is frustrating and is difficult to be with. But I feel just the importance of being with that. I'm not trying to get rid of, again, of the question with the theological solution or with an action that could be very limited, but actually to take our time and let movement or solutions or actions come from within. And in my experience, the actions become like there is no sense of wanting to change anything anymore, in a way. But there is this tuning into that and embracing that. And that seems much more powerful than forcefully trying to change anything. But again, it's really important thing to keep alive, like not to solve as a question. And see like through our practice, through our life, how that changes, you know. Many times it's very, very fiery in some moment, or we fall into an experience of compassion or seeing through the skin of others, and we only feel that suffering, you know, and tuning into deeper than that and seeing how we fall into another place and another place and another place, and they are changes. So to allow this movement inside to happen also. I feel it's, sometimes it's very difficult to move when we see ourselves and we advertise ourselves as a peace activist or whatever activist. It takes a while to take that title out. And sometimes it's important to take all our titles out and see really what's left. Mm-hmm. Could I be activist, peace activist, without screaming on the street? That's a question about peace. Or could I be a peace activist without going to a refugee camp or doing anything about it? So that's something to feel and to think about, that if that's possible. Do some people not have such a strong whispers to show them their paths? I'm 30 now. It's funny when we say our age, no? I'm 30 now. Some people in this room will be like, that's why. And some people will think like, I hope when I'm 30 I will have this figured out, you know? Like, it's just cool. And I have given myself 2 years already. After my graduation, to find out what I want. And I still do not really hear something, anything convincing. Or am I waiting for shouts instead of whispers? This is a question. Or are whispers often very small, as like pointing to little things like, I like eating good food, or I like wild camping, and not things like, strong things like, I like justice, so I become a lawyer. Yeah, I think we read too much the Bible, where this angel comes to Mary and tells her very clearly what will happen, and then it happens. And somewhere we wish that there is a voice that comes in our dreams or in our meditation to make it more romantic, but could come also while we are in the toilet. This voice, just like, finally, some clear voice speaking Dutch or Catalan or some, you know, clear language and saying, your life is about this, 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 and now it's time for you to get into this subject. I'll tell you the next. But somehow it's not quite like that. I think we all have experience that is not quite like that, you know. So they are those whispers. And I like to speak about those whispers and the awakening, the ability to listen deeply our needs and our dreams and that which we are for, let's say. And that is something that we can feed, that we can give time to, like it's something that we can promote in our life, like we can give time, like what we are doing this week here is in a way this, like stretching our ears or just like tuning into deeper voices other than what the TV says, what the parents say, what the neighbors say, what the friends say. It's like, okay, one moment. And what do I want? What is important for me? So that is very, very important to take this time and to listen deeply. And in this listening deeply, things are said, we can say. Like things become more clear. But still, usually there is the factor of adventure or the factor of having to try it out or experimenting. So there is a sense of where I want to go, let's say. A sense of, yes, this is really what I love to do. And then even in this sense, in this line, there are like 1,000 different specific ways to go about this same subject or same area. So it's like allowing ourselves like to try one and the other and to spend time with one and the other and letting go some of the ways and going for some other ways. And it can happen also that 5 years later we look back and we say, well, actually, it's not exactly this. So. And then is when a lot of courage is needed, and I think it's very important to to be open to change again. You know? We tend to have a very clear sense of the order of things, you know. So it's pretty stressful. We should be done with the school at such age, we should with university at such age, then we have to find the perfect boyfriend, whatever. Then we have to get married and get on with the children, want it or not. And then, you know, you see this pattern, no? It's like, or not, or you just go your flow and then you are 14 and like, oh my God, now I have to have the children. With whom? This, you know, this happens, and it's really like a lot about this, like, sense of time, and very clearly, like, we have our life organized in some way in our head, and, you know, like, we how to play with the flow of our own rhythm, and at the same time, like, be part of this society where if we want to be a lawyer, we may as well start soon, you know, or, you know, so this it's not easy to find our own flow, our own sense of time within the structure of what the sense of time is in this society. But to have time for experimentation and to have time for being lost and not knowing is crucial and is very, I would say, humanly needed. You know. I remember as a child, no, those I don't know when was it that maybe we were 7 or something like years old or something, and one exercise in the school was to draw what you wanted to be when like when you would be adult, and everyone made all these drawings about thing was boys were like firemen and girls were more like teacher, school teacher or a dancer or this kind of things, but and I draw these tomato sticks with tomatoes growing on it and sheep over there, and not much going on, just like countryside. And the feeling is, what I remember, all my classmates, how you say, no one even remembers or what of what they put in that paper. And I have the feeling that nothing had changed. Nothing, like, I have the feeling of, like, yes, this is what I want, to grow tomatoes, to take care of sheep, to milk the cows. And yet, like, how many airplanes I have to take to take care of sheep. How many things we have to get involved with and just leave to just go to that which is super simple. So what about listening deeply this whisper and letting this whisper be, even if this whisper doesn't say anything specific? Like, sometimes because we don't, we cannot get what the whisper means, we jump into the first trend. So what about just being with the whisper and letting the whisper alive, even if what we are doing is other things? It's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But to not forget or to keep one plug at least into that which is important. Mm-hmm. Because then it feels like no matter what we do, it's kind of connected to that. And no matter how long it takes, it is pointing to that. So it doesn't really matter if you end up being a lawyer or a doctor or taking care of the sheep. How can you be connected and in that way open and vulnerable and still be protected without having to put up a shield?
Mm-hmm.
Or hardening inside. Yeah, that's good. Well, this is the fun of life. No? There is a song in Spanish that says like, to love and to let myself be loved, I would never say sorry for that, you know, how to, I'll always be ready to love and to let myself be loved. Basically saying, because if I stop doing that, I may as well die. There is no life anymore. And then that's a challenge to me to become vulnerable and to stay vulnerable. There is a huge risk, we can say, in being vulnerable. And yet, the other choice is to be dead. Like we can live, we can choose to say yes to life or not to life, and still we would have a body. But to say yes to life, it totally implies this becoming who you are. And that has a huge risk, because it means to let the boundaries and the walls soften so more things can enter. So there is more chances for us to be attacked and touched. And yet, which other option is there? And it's not easy, and I know there are many, many situations where that is especially difficult, when we have been hurt or deeply hurt or in our childhood, like, that we carry this. And yet we all know that there is a moment where we do have the chance to say yes to life no matter what, again, with the full awareness of knowing what that means. And that may mean suffering. That may mean being seen too much, or being too vulnerable. But the steps of taking out our clothes and being who we are, I think, is completely crucial. And it can be done slowly, slowly. It doesn't mean that we have to all now hurt me. No, but have this deep intention of like, I want to live. I want to be free. I don't want to be closed in my own fears. And that implies willingness and the intention to grow up as human being. And I still today after having heard so many terrible stories, believe that that's possible. Do you think we have to protect ourselves sometimes of another person? Or is it a mind game? Is this protection not needed? The same, but with some attention also to clear voices. If there is a moment where, when there is a clear person or situation that for whatever reason is upset or has the plan to hurt us, let's say, then please be with good friends, you know. Like, please do find ways to be safe. That's, I think that's obvious in a way, you know. There are times when if that happens, there is a situation where, like, we cannot, where we don't trust life. This is one thing that we can open up. And there are situations where, for whatever reason, we know that someone somehow wants to hurt us. And then please do take refuge in whatever, you know, our parents' house, our friends' place, or a psychologist, you know, whatever could help and whatever can give a sense of being safe, let's say. Because if we don't feel safe, like, there is something very instinctive, very, like, inbuilt in the survival that cannot go deep, let's say. So we need to have somehow the survival solved or taken care of in order to start to even feel the gratitude of life and the feeling safe in life in a more wide way. Can falling asleep also be a kind of escaping or a lack of discipline during meditation? Yes, it can, definitely. It can definitely be, and is a good question and good thing to keep in mind or to experiment. Like, perhaps there is something I'm going through, and somehow at the same time it happens that I'm sleeping all the time, or in every meditation I just go into sleeping, like, automatically. Like, in the meditation, sleeping can happen, but we fall asleep in meditation with the intention of meditation. So there is the sometimes lying down for meditation and having the intention of going to bed, or the intention of going to rest, or the intention to not think for a while. That is one thing. But the suggestion here is we do lie down, or we sit, or we lie down, but there is a very clear intention of making ourselves available or tuning into. And then the space is completely different. Like, even if we lose consciousness, like, even if we seem to be sleeping, probably what's going on is very, very different from just setting ourselves up to go to bed, you know. So that's the maybe one thermometer to check a little bit. And just to have this little suspicion, like, this, it could be an escape. Yes. But it doesn't mean that every time that we fall asleep on meditation is an escape at all. So to check, like, what is the intention when I lie down for meditation? Like, what is the intention, like, where I put my heart and in which way I align myself and make myself available. That would be the one way to know. Could you say something about concentration meditation? And about discipline? Yeah, if we cannot bear the not knowing, then it's good to concentrate, because we will think we know. Or if it seems too much to just let everything loose and just have this center point and then and let everything else be done, let's say, then you can do something about it, which is to concentrate. I would say concentration, ultimately is not needed, and yet sometimes could be a very, very good exercise to start with, you know. Sometimes could bring really a sense of clarity and a sense of togetherness and being here that we need sometimes. Like when things are too loose or too many things in our mind, like sometimes we need that. Like same that is sometimes we are like I don't know, too excited or nervous or whatever, we go to the fridge and take a piece of chocolate or an ice cream. We could say ultimately it's not needed, and yet in that moment maybe it really releases something and it helps a lot, you know. So why not to have the chocolate in the fridge, if you have a fridge? So that's, you know, to keep concentration either as a tool that we use when it's needed and to be wise about it, like, yes, now I need that, so let's put this in action. And to also let go of that if it's the moment to let go of that, which is not always that clear, so that's tricky. And again, it's asking us to be alive with life. And about discipline, I think discipline is a tricky word. I feel during many years I lived my life kind of thinking that discipline was super important and feeling basically constantly 24 hour guilty to not be disciplined at all. So at the end I just thought, like, wait a second, this doesn't make sense. I'm trying to meditate and everyone is speaking about discipline, and I feel bad that I'm not disciplined, and yet I'm super interested in what's happening in meditation. It's just that I don't do it when they tell me I have to do it. They say in the beginning discipline is very important, because if you are sitting, you have pain in your knees, unless you are very disciplined, you will not sit. You will find excuses. Maybe yes, maybe not. If your heart is burning, you will go through that and through many other millions of more crazy things. If your heart is burning, the word discipline to me, like, doesn't make sense, because you cannot do anything else than finding out. Of course, if the heart is not burning, then we may need others or ourselves to put rules on what we do and how many times a day. So also I think is to be wise about that. If I feel I'm escaping, or if in the beginning this mood of meditation doesn't come naturally, maybe it's interesting to just set up a time of the day where I do meditate. And I don't have to think about that every day. You know I take a shower and I meditate. You know, or I have dinner in the evening and then I meditate, whatever. So that I don't have to think or force myself. I just, it's part of the schedule, like brushing the teeth, no? And then it becomes a routine. And there are days where I have to pull myself a little bit. You know, there is this like, today is this nice program on TV. Shall I watch it or go to meditate? So in this sense, it's, you know, but more than discipline, I would say, to become adult is really to listen deeply. And maybe there is time and room for watching this fun program on TV and move the meditation into another time of the day for that day. So I'm much more pro to this being alive with life and deeply listening to what is needed in every moment. And again, using discipline or forcing myself to do one thing only when it's totally needed, like only when I'm in a situation where I don't trust my head anymore, where I don't trust my own willingness to find out, then maybe I need this extra force to pull me in, you know. But in a regular basis, I would say, like, if you can, just go more for the feeling and to try for that decision of meditation to come from within, not from something on the head, let's say. What is your relationship to enlightenment? Are you enlightened? What does enlightenment mean to you? My relationship to enlightenment. I think it's an important question. Like, it's something that I remember when I first went to India. Somehow I spent like all these years in the Buddhist context, and everyone was speaking about enlightenment, and all the books speak about enlightenment, and it's clear that that happened to everyone, and it's of course clear that exists, and blah, 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 and yet no one is enlightened. So I started to figure out, wait a second, this doesn't make sense. They are promising that this exists. All the books speak about it. And yet, who knows? Who knows somebody enlightened? Who knows someone enlightened? So to me, it started to like, wait a second. At some point, I just said, okay, it either exists or it doesn't exist. If it doesn't exist, just tell me now and we will keep on being friends. If it exists, just also point me, what is this? No, point me someone in this life, not in maybe, now, who is enlightened? And at some point that became like super clear. No, I have to find someone. Otherwise, this is crap, you know. I mean, they are lying otherwise. And I had to go to India. And I can say I met someone. And I remember the moment I met this person, I just knew the answer. and the whole subject disappeared. Even from my own practice, let's say, it disappeared. So sometimes we need to, like I think St. Thomas, no? Who needs to touch and see, not only hear, like touch and see. Sometimes we need to touch and see to keep on going in this cloud, no? And what I can say about this seems personal question is, a few years ago something happened where I was brought what I call enlightenment. All I can say has nothing to do with anything I ever thought of enlightenment. And from that time on, the process completely changed, and there is something moving inside. There is a movement which I call like kind of the configuration of the whole being into that, which seems to have nothing to do with anything I can do. And it's like this process is going. And there is no wanting to be there or not wanting to be there. It's just a sense of, yes, this is, and it is, and it's not my business to live in that, let's say. It is the natural movement of everything. Without exception in all the realms. So life becomes much fun. Why is it so that we almost all have this sense of not being whole, and yet at the same time the wholeness is in us? It seems so pointless. Yeah, why the clouds are white. No? To really start to love this what we are. Like in such a way where there is no wholeness or not wholeness. How to say? Like to start loving life as it is, like without comparison of, or without the questioning of, like, why is this and why is that and why? We could say it's a mystery, it's a fun, quick way to solve the problem. And yet it's so beautiful to live in this movement of having to find out, having to live. Like, we are not allowed to escape our lives, let's say. We are not allowed to be lazy. And that to me is not pointless. Like, it's beautiful to have this seed inside where we are thrown into the world without having asked for to live our lives. And it's so beautiful to find waves and lakes and tall trees and short trees. My outer relative world is based upon my conditioned thoughts and action upon these thoughts. Please tell me more about action from the peaceful mind. Does the outer world transform automatically when the mind is at rest? Does it need to fade out? Yeah, it's a tricky thing, no? When we try our best to do our best, but yet what we know is only what we learn. So it's very narrow, let's say. We learn to solve our problems the same way our mom solved our problems. And then if we manage, sometimes we learn our own way. But we are very conditioned to how we act. We are very conditioned from our society, from our families, from our friends, from everything that is around us. And it's difficult to discriminate. It's difficult to know what is mine, and what is borrowed. No? It's difficult to know what is mine and what is borrowed. And yet, yes, when there is a peaceful state, there seems to be transformation and change outside. Mm-hmm. So the outer world, yes, transforms automatically when we are connected. Our actions changes and our way of dealing with the problems, our way of being with people, like everything changes. And I would say, like, it needs to change. If our meditations, if our practice done put our life upside down, then it means that we are not really doing our job, you know. If our practice, if whatever we do in the cushion or in the beds here doesn't turn our points of view upside down and question things and change our life, like all the areas of our lives, then we are not doing the right practice. We are not practicing, we are passing time, or we are being around, you know. So to know that sometimes it's a surprise that when we go in, we think we go in for one specific reason, and then as we go in and keep deepening, we find out that what is happening here in the meditation hall has to do with absolutely every single area of our life. So we thought that was easy, that we were going to approach one subject and then all the subjects are upside down and all the subjects are touched and have to be renewed and rethought and lived differently. And that's, to me, a great adventure and beautiful. You know, we thought we came here for something and suddenly, like, everything changes. So to go for it and to not allow any area of life to be left out, basically. That is true transformation. So there are a few more questions. But there will always be more questions. So maybe we can just sit. lie down like for a couple of minutes together and like questions, big questions.